Welcome back to The Wild Podcast. If this is the first episode that you've listened to, I so appreciate you joining us. And for those of you who have already listened to some episodes, I hope that you're enjoying the podcast so far. As you can probably tell from the title, this episode is an interview with somebody you might already know and somebody who I'm lucky enough to have as a friend here in New York. Tara Marzuki is an influencer from County Cork in Ireland, but has been living here in New York for almost 4 years. She's best known for vlogging her days around New York City and her impeccable video editing skills. Tara also has a degree in textile art and fashion and has worked many years on costume design, including one particular stint on the Game of Thrones set. I sat down with Tara in her new Brooklyn loft to chat about her journey to becoming a full-time influencer and content creator, her struggles with working for herself and life in New York City, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Enjoy this episode and don't forget to follow Tara's daily fashion inspiration and realness on Instagram. It's at Tara Mars. You definitely won't regret that one. Thanks for tuning in. Enjoy this episode and I will talk to you on the next one. Guest,
I know. Welcome.
Here. I'm like owning
it. You've christened it.
I was like, Tara, when can I come? I've been hounding you for to do this podcast, so I'm excited that despite us sitting on the floor and being a little bit
surrounded
warm,
by absolute chaos of my all of my junk and all of my clothes that I've accumulated,
but it'll get there, and I'm excited to see the project because you started a new Instagram for the whole project.
It's called at a Brooklyn Loft, so it's kind of like my new social media baby, much like you in the podcast. Mm-hmm. I haven't quite gotten there with the podcast yet, so it's always nice to have something other than your everyday work to kind of like work on. So that's kind of like my new thing.
And did you just start that at spur of a moment, or like, because it kind of just came out of nowhere, you were like, I'm gonna start this
It was
interiors project.
Yeah, no, it wasn't really like out of the blue for us, because as soon as we saw this place, we kind of like were just bursting with ideas about what we're going to do with it, how we're going to use it, and kind of just felt natural to have an Instagram page for it. Plus, I think, you know, when you kind of get to your late 20s, people are kind of obsessed with like home decor and like,
right.
I don't know, it just kind of seemed like a fun journey to document, because we kind of just gave it a makeover. It was a little bit shabby and kind of just wanted to put our own spin on it. So yeah, we kind of gave it a bit of a, like a light refurb, a bit of cosmetic DIY work, and we just thought it was a fun journey.
Yeah, no doubt you'll make it more of...
Yeah. I've got big plans for this place, for sure.
Good. That's exciting. It's always good to do something good for the soul as well.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
you're like a natural at it.
Aw, like, thanks.
I'm like, can you come over to my apartment? Because I've been doing this podcast, like, and I usually come to other people's apartments because mm-hmm. it's so much easier. Their apartment is typically bigger than mine.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow. Like, all this interior inspiration. I'm like,
dying.
Shit, I need to do something with mine, like, because... I'm just like in and out. As long as it's clean, I'm like good, you know?
Look, we're all there. I mean, if I was working like a 9-to-5, I'd be in the same boat.
Yeah.
I would not care. I just want to come home and sleep.
Yeah.
But we're trying to, you know, do a little something extra with this place, because we hopefully want to turn it into a business as well.
Amazing.
While we're here, yeah.
Nice.
So, yeah. Our plans are to hopefully kind of get it off the ground as like a shoot space. So fingers okay. crossed, we'll kind of like, you know, rent it out to like our photographer friends and anyone that's like
you could put it on Peerspace.
Yeah, Peerspace. Yeah. Anyone that just kind of wants a nice space to create content. That's kind of
cool.
Our plans.
Definitely.
So you got the little exclusive on that there. I don't think I've even told anyone.
No, I didn't know that.
There you go.
Feeling special. So I think that people, I know we chatted a little bit about this beforehand, but I think people know you, and I know that your name... People are going to listen to the podcast because they know you and they like you and they want to know more about you. So I want to make this all about your journey, in a sense that because I've kind of known you a little bit more personally over the years, I know that it hasn't been easy. And I'm always the first one to kind of say, you know, if people see you on social, I'm like, no, well, Tara like started out on her own in Manhattan and she, you know, did the long distance relationship thing. And
yeah,
she's genuinely interested in like building good content.
Yeah.
And she has a knack for that. And like, you're one of the examples that I'll always say, you know, it's just does it to the like core of you. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Like, I'm, like, it's
just
dying.
Kind of comes out of your, like, you just,
yeah,
like,
no, I give it, it's from the heart.
It does,
yeah,
it,
everything I do
heart.
Is from the heart. Yeah,
it is. And I think that's what makes me so interested in your story, because I know that it's from the heart. And like, as shallow as social media can be, you make it like less shallow.
Yeah,
if that
okay.
makes sense.
Well, I try. No, I totally get it, and I'm very self-aware.
Yeah.
And I know how everyone views this industry and the people in it and the people, and it is a trade-off sometimes of, like, you know, you don't want to come across as a sellout, but, you know, you also, you know, I enjoy making this content. I enjoy making content every day. Like, I view stories as my job.
Yeah.
Like, I'll specifically get out of the house and make 20 frames that are a beautiful little snippets,
yeah,
of my day. You know, so I'm not always just going out because, oh, it's just kind of what I'm doing that day. It's I view it as part of my job,
yeah,
to kind of create content every day, wherever I am or whatever I'm doing. So it's a little bit of a funny one, because I don't know, it's like, it's my job and I want to keep it my job and I want to do this every day, but there is that, like, compromise of, like, sometimes you have to do work and sometimes,
mm-hmm,
you have to work with sponsors. But I do try to be self-aware, but I know in my heart, so, like, there is just those cringy times sometimes on social media that you know you have to just, like, step
own
up.
It,
yeah,
yeah,
and own it, and whatever it is,
yeah,
what it is. But
and you're like, all my aunties are going to see the selfie.
Dying, yeah. But the last year, I've really tried to focus on being as authentic as I can with any kind of sponsorships that I'm doing, and kind of just putting my own spin on it, because I feel like everyone has the, you know, you don't have to be obsessed with absolutely every tan that comes out or,
yes,
a big eyelash. You know, you can say you're trying, you know, it's just like the word. I'm just very careful of how I portray something.
Yeah.
And I try and show it in the most honest light within my routine or my,
mm-hmm,
life as I can.
Yeah.
I don't want to go forward saying any statements or conducting myself in a way that I would regret or find cringy in the future. So,
mm-hmm,
I mean, I'm a naturally, like, at time to times, like, a cringy person. Like, I'm just all out there. Like, I try and do this whole, like, mysterious, like, cool thing on, you know, Instagram, you know, but
yeah,
it's just not me.
Okay.
I'm an open book, and, you know, I don't know, that's kind of my view on it.
Okay.
I'm cringe to a level that I can accept, you know, but I try and keep everyone in mind.
Yeah, so that to me sounds like a very advanced strategy towards social media, a professional strategy towards social media, but it's taken you a long time to get there,
mm-hmm,
and I know, because you've been doing it for so long. When did you start posting content? Do you remember the earliest stages
of a
blog, or was there, like,
yeah,
was YouTube the first thing?
No, I had a blog, and
you're saying very carefully.
Oh my god, it was so bad. But you know, those one of those things that you have to start somewhere.
Yes. Yeah.
It was really bad, but I know it was around maybe 2009-ish, maybe,
okay,
like late 2009 for sure. I had, like, a blog, and at this point, like, blogs had only just become a thing, so the only template I had to copy was, like, Perez Hilton, like,
no,
his celeb
way.
News, and I pretty
you
much
and Perez Hilton are, like, opposite ends of the scale,
but, like, that was all that there was. Like, that was, like, the only, and that's not even a blog, you know. That wasn't, like, I don't think at this point people were even, like, individuals were even writing for blogs as, like, a hobby.
Yeah,
it was like I was only seeing, like, the very, like, commercial sides of a blog. So yeah, I had my own, like, celeb, oh god, what would you even call it? Like, celeb gossip, judging what they're wearing, e-news,
yeah,
all over it.
I think our generation got influenced,
it was horrendous,
by that, because I started out as well doing celebrity stuff,
yeah,
like, for, like, a minute.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I was like, I can't keep up with this. And also I had no interest,
oh,
whatsoever.
So bad, yeah.
Whatsoever. I
I'd
think
say
that
it
was
lasted
just, like, our
a
generation.
Month.
Yeah.
I think it was something to start with, wasn't it? Like,
yeah,
everyone kind of wanted a piece of it. It was something you could do at home. So I know that's probably the earliest thing. And then eventually, like, maybe 6 months in or whatever, I dissed that, got rid of that. And then I started, like, my actual,
mm-hmm,
blog that was, like, a personal style blog. And that was something silly as well. I think it was a blogger URL, you know, the ones where you don't pay for it, it's just, like, the,
mm-hmm,
free URL. It was like, Tara is blogging now, like, something real
Tara is blogging now,
yeah, real creative with that one.
Pretty
pretty
so
bad.
At that point, did you realize that you had a knack for either fashion or creating content or photography? Did you see anything there that you were like, holy shit, like I'm consumed by this, like I'm really interested in
yes.
a certain area?
I think that happened with me, not so much with the blog, but YouTube.
Okay.
Because I think I could share more in like a more quick time frame,
mm-hmm.
and you can get a lot more information out there when you're talking than versus when you're writing. That was like the first thing that I was like, oh my god, I'm addicted to this. Like I remember I it was definitely leaving cert year, so I was studying for my exams and I would like study and like take like a 1 hour break and make like a YouTube video on my webcam and I put it straight up.
Okay,
and that
no
was
edits.
No edits. That was it. I mean, I probably was playing around with iMovie, but it was kind of like I was putting up a video like every day. It was like just my little escapism
yeah.
for the day, away from study. Clearly must not have had a boyfriend at the time.
So you were...
That's my only excuse, I'd say. Because who else would have that kind of time in between studying? But
right.
yeah, I loved it. I loved
but
it.
You were posting videos, like, of what?
Oh, everything. I think I was really into beauty at the time, so
okay.
and like my hair, kind of like the stuff that I do now, but just like a really like really just small version of what I was like what I'm doing now. But it was kind of, it was really honest. It was like before the time of sponsorships or anything like that, so it was generally mm-hmm. genuinely things that I loved doing. And this was back in like the Pixie Woo days, like where there was like
mm-hmm.
they were doing like makeup tutorials, I was learning from them and then like sharing my looks. So it was like little makeup tutorials and how to do your hair this way. And I've always been kind of like a knacky person, and I kind of just enjoyed like the instant feedback from it.
Okay.
I think so. Yeah, that was kind of like, that was the first thing that I was really addicted to, and I still am like quite addicted to it.
To YouTube.
Yeah, it's changed dramatically.
Yeah.
Just the things that people want to watch changes over the years, and like looking back, it's been such an interesting journey and seeing kind of like the trends of types of videos that do well on YouTube. Like at the moment, it's mainly just my life. I'm kind of just kind of reduced it down to just vlogs now
mm-hmm.
because that's what I'm enjoying sharing the most. And it's a bit of a personal memoir for me. I've never been one to like write in a diary, so for me, it's like writing in a diary and like having all of these little memories. But I think what I love about it is the fact that there's always something to learn. Because
okay.
I like being, I like my hand in a lot of things. Like I like a little bit of techie stuff. I like learning about cameras. I like oversharing.
Mm-hmm.
I like having memories. So it's kind of this place where I can kind of do all of that. And I get bored very quickly. There's not a lot of, I don't have a lot of hobbies. I don't have a lot of things that I'm interested in.
But you're passionate about content creation.
Yeah,
like,
as an umbrella, and that's the fun thing about it is the space has been changing so much over the years that it's like, what's the next thing? And
mm-hmm.
I've been finding that part of social media as a whole like fascinating.
Okay, so you were doing this studying for exams in Ireland still. What year did you move to New York?
It was about 8 months after I finished university, so I want to say it was like, we're in 2019, I want to say like end of 2016 I moved here, if that's right, or end of 2015. It was like New Year's Eve 2015, I think.
New Year's Eve.
Yeah, so I had Christmas and then I moved here on New Year's Eve, like in the depths of winter.
Oh my god.
I didn't
on
even
your own,
yeah
wasn't
on my
it?
Own didn't even like
did you
know,
have friends over here?
Had no friends. However, Erica from Retro Flame was really kind and she actually was at home for Christmas and she let me stay in her place, so which was a huge help because I didn't know anyone. So to have somewhere just to land when
absolutely.
I got here and just sleep for like
yeah.
two nights was fantastic.
To know
and
where you were going.
Yeah, to know where I was
place.
Going.
Yeah.
I had the whole flat to myself, so that was like, it was one of those things I still look back and I'm like, wow, that was like a really nice thing she didn't have to do, but it helped me so much just to
yeah.
have that place to go, I suppose. So yeah, I kind of just arrived here completely clueless. I'd been here on like holiday a couple of years before, once or twice, but it's very disorientating. It was kind of like one of those things you wake up on the first day. I don't know if you had this, but like that cry, that massive cry you had the first day you moved over here.
I stopped crying by the, like when
oh.
I left Dublin Airport. It was a continuous flow of tears.
Very emotional. I think it was adrenaline was keeping me going, but I remember I woke up the next day and was like, what the F have I done? Like, I'm so alone.
Yeah.
But
were you scared?
I think I was excited more than I was scared. I just had a feeling it would work out. I think I was just driven off my like list of things to do. Find somewhere to live, find a job, get more experience, because I had come out of doing a fashion design degree and, you know, New York is such a hub of fashion. I think I was just excited to get out of the pool of being in Ireland and really go for like bigger opportunities.
And you never gave Ireland a go, like you kind of came straight from college.
Yeah, I didn't, and in a way I feel like I did, because all throughout school I was doing like internships. I would spend my summers like working within fashion or costume. I did Game of Thrones, like the last job I had in Ireland was I worked in the costume department of Game of Thrones, and that really was like, okay, I'm not doing costume, like that's it, I'm not going back to that. And there wasn't like a huge amount of opportunity in Dublin for that I hadn't already like pursued, basically. Okay. So I felt like I wasn't really a London girl. I had kind of tried London for a couple of weeks before, didn't really fancy doing that again, and I was just like, there was just something about New York. I think that there's something about New York when you land here, whether it be on a holiday and you're like, oh my god, like I could live here. And it's hard to shake that feeling once you've been here, I feel like. So I definitely feel like I made the right decision.
Okay, well that's good. Well, you're still here.
Yeah, I'm still here. Yeah.
So you came here kind of as very young at the time. You would have been what, 21?
No, god no. 22? I was like 23 when I graduated. Okay. So like I had like, you know, I'd done a little bit of this blogging thing for a while. It was like my part-time job at at this point, and I had just gone like full-time by the time I graduated. So I had 8 months of just being like fully like self-employed blogger for like about 8 months before I left.
Before you left. And you came over here with the intention of pursuing that?
No, honestly, I never thought that this would be like a full-time thing. I think it's something I wanted to do full-time, but I came over here to like pursue fashion. And I got an internship at like a high-end designer, and I was the only intern. I felt like I was, you know, fit in really well. But as I was going, I just kind of was falling more and more out of love with fashion.
Can you tell me the high-end designer?
It was a brand called Gabriella Hearst in New York. Okay. So like really expensive, really beautiful. The designer has a great story behind them. It was just like, it was still kind of considered a startup, but it was very heavily, you know, they got off at a really great foot. You know, they wanted to be like the next Celine, next Hermes. So very luxury, very contemporary. And I was kind of like one of their first like long-term interns. I was there for like 8 or 9 months, which doesn't sound like a long time, but in New York, I feel like that's a long time. Yeah. But I learned a lot there, and I kind of pursued everything I wanted to do other than being like a full-time employee. But by that point, I did feel like I was really enjoying the YouTube thing, and it kind of just came to a head where I just didn't want to be in fashion anymore. Okay. And I just came to the realization that, wow, this is a fast-paced industry, and I'm not a like, it's not that I can't work fast or anything like that, but it was just I couldn't comprehend, I couldn't get on board with the fact that it is such a fast revolving door, and you know, there's like two collections a year, and you know, you do one and then it's forgotten about, and then you know, people are just constantly working, and there's not really a lot of, I think for me the thing was, there wasn't a lot of like, unless you really have fashion in your heart and soul and it's your biggest passion in life, there's not a lot of payback in fashion in terms of like
the gratification. Cycle itself,
the cycle is very fast. And I wasn't really getting that like satisfaction and gratification out of it anymore. So I just, when I was looking to my future, I was just like, oh my god, I just can't see it. Like, I can't see myself working at this pace and also enjoying my life at the same time. So that's kind of when I started to kind of change my view on fashion, which was very hard. Like, I think it took me a year to come to terms with even considering that I might not be in fashion, because it was something I wanted to do since I was literally 10 years old. I was one of those people, like, very lucky in terms of the sense, like, I just always knew what I wanted to do. It was never a question, never wanted to do anything else. It was like I was in my copybook at 10 years old, like drawing dresses, like that's what I wanted to do. So it took me a long time to come to terms with the fact that it was not going to be in my future. But it was also very freeing once I kind of accepted it.
Yeah, okay. So how did you kind of, so you're still quite young, how did you survive in Manhattan basically Did you start making friends at this point? Did you start networking? Like, how was that first year?
The first year was mad. I was only at my internship like 2 or 3 days a week, so that gave me quite a lot of room during the week to kind of explore other things, work on my YouTube, work on my blog, kind of figure out what I wanted to do. And in that time, I actually took up photography. Like, I've always taken pictures and stuff for my blog, but I started to kind of get more skills in Photoshop and Adobe and all of this. And I was also needed money. I was like, I needed an extra kind of source of income. So I kind of started getting into, I was like, okay, well, I'm not quite at the stage yet where I can live off of sponsorships. Actually, when I moved to New York, all of my sponsorships vanished. I had to start right from the bottom, build up my PR list for a full year before I got any kind of social media work again. But I was like, I can still keep my foot in it. So what I did was I kind of just applied the same skills, but as someone that has to wear like a lot of different hats, like be a photographer, an editor, but also take content with an audience in mind. And at the time, like, this was like 3 or 4 years ago, so like social media was still very new.
Yeah.
But because I was doing social media for a couple of years, I kind of understood what people like to consume. And at the time, that really worked to my favor, because you would have a photographer, but they may not have any sense of how to take a picture specifically targeted for social media. So that was kind of like my niche. I felt like I had a little bit of a niche.
So you're able to marry all those skills,
all those
together.
Different things. And also because of my background in fashion, I was able to style a lot of stuff. So the fun thing for me was, if I was working with a clothing brand, you know, I'd spend 1 or 2 days like pulling clothes, styling stuff, which I really enjoyed, and then, you know, booking the model and basically taking care of like the entire production side of it. And I found that fun because it wasn't just like one thing.
Yeah.
So I found that like really exciting, and I was able to kind of make money off of a hobby, I guess, and also get more experience in it. But again, that all sort of came to a head after like I was doing that for a year. And New York's crazy, you know how fast you can move up in New York. And I took this thing that I wasn't even really that passionate about, but that I was good at, and, you know, went from just doing it for myself to within a year I had worked with 2 really big clients. And by the time I got to that like second or third client, they had referred me for like a really big job for Amazon. And I was basically doing it was like a styled shoot, like where it was the first time where everyone else was doing the jobs that I would do for me. And I was so out of my depth. I remember arriving being like, oh my god, like I went from just doing stuff all myself to having this entire team, like assistants, stylists, you know, people, like this huge set in Williamsburg, and a whole team to impress, basically watching my every move. And I was like, afterwards I was like, oh my god, this is a hard no for me. Like, I can't work like this. I'm so out of my depth. I did the shoot and it was fine, like we got through it, but I remember looking around, like I wasn't even doing anything. Like, I had an assistant who was like fighting to press the shutter button for me. Like, it was all hooked up to a computer. Literally all I had to do was like press enter and take the picture, because there was a stylist styling everything. Like, there was nothing for me to do,
and people probably get paid so much money.
Oh, it was insane money. And I was just like, it was one of the things that I was like, I don't deserve to be here. And I just stepped right out of it, because I was like, I know photographers that would kill for this job. Like, I ended up here by accident, basically. Right. So that was a real wake-up call. That like, I need to go back and do my own thing again. So that's kind of when it kind of came to the end of the year, and visas and all of that stuff kind of came up, and I visited a lawyer, and I was kind of like, you know, luckily I'd built up press in Ireland and was able to make a portfolio based off of, you know, little articles here and there that people had been mentioning me online, and just built up a good portfolio of references as well. So was able to kind of come back to New York on a new visa, self-employed, and kind of just ready to just focus on one thing.
Yeah, got it. So you live with your boyfriend Colin now.
You haven't always. Yeah.
And you spent a lot of time on your own when you got that visa.
Yeah.
Then it was just Tara was working for Tara.
Yeah.
You were like, I don't want to work for anybody else. Yeah. So you were really kind of tunnel vision on that.
Yes, that's like, and my Colin, one must in life is I have to work for myself.
Oh, right. So, and then, and so Colin wasn't here. And what were the struggles, like both professionally and emotionally, that you came up against, like in that period of time?
It was definitely like, I it's funny, I actually really enjoyed the struggle, which I know is like really weird, but I felt like I was growing so mm-hmm. much within myself, and like every time I was able to independently be an adult, I felt like such like a winner. Mm. I was just like, oh my god, I'm paying my rent, I'm managing this, I'm managing that, I'm making money, oh my god, I'm like doing it, like yeah. I may be just scrimping by, but I'm you know, my biggest thing was not to be in a 9-to-5, like it's yeah. just, it just doesn't suit me, and it really like, it takes the spark out of me. So just to be able to like feed myself, I mean, it was ramen noodles, like $1 ramen noodles half the time. But that first year was just like, I was addicted to the grind, like I was mm. like, I would honestly spend 12 hours a day on LinkedIn like looking for work and just being so hungry to like make it happen my way. But it was like, it was a tough year, mm. and I don't think I realized how isolated I was, but like, I'm an only child, so I'm like, I'm kind of good on my own, I'm not okay. someone that like needs people around, but I think it was good for me to have that time on my own to really like see every part of myself in every single light and like know who I am,
yeah,
and just strip away all of like the things that like are a distraction or yeah attached yeah. to you. And like as well with my relationship, it was kind of like, it was, we had been long distance before when we met, so I had a taster for what it was like.
Mm-hmm.
So like I, at that point we were together 5 years, and two and a half of those were long distance already. And then we were living together for 3 years and a bit, and then I came here to do my thing again. So it definitely was an adjustment, and the time difference, like 5 hours doesn't seem like that much, but mm. when you're trying to coordinate yeah. a call with somebody, it's, and you know yeah. some, one person's tired from being out all day and the other person's full of beans, like it was definitely like a long adjustment. And you know, towards the end, honestly, it was getting to the point where like we were still like committed, but we had grown, we had been gotten so used to just being apart that it was getting to the point where like, oh sure, if we only call each other once every second day or third day, like that became the norm.
Yeah.
So that it was kind of like, in a way I was happy that I was able to be independent and that I wasn't a super needy girlfriend and that he wasn't super needy of me, but at the same time wasn't like the healthiest thing mm-hmm. looking back. So it definitely got to that point like just before he moved over that it was if he had not come over, I don't think we'd still be together, because yeah. there's only so long you can kind of do like long distance, and I'd been here like 2.5 years already, so I would fly over quite like every 3 months and stuff like that, and he was doing a master's, so I think it was hard, but it was good, because I'm really happy that he was able to focus on his master's
kind of,
and I was able to kind of go away and do that independent thing, which I always crave. Like I'm a quite an independent person, so there was parts of it that I definitely like loved, but it was also just an adjustment. Like when he moved over, it was like, it was kind of like undoing all of those like years of not expecting anything from anyone and like yeah. just having the bare bones of a relationship. So it was kind of like a funny time,
but yeah, but you made it work, and
we did yeah. yeah, but just about. And like, I mean, I wouldn't be out here recommending long distance relationships to anyone, but at the time, definitely for that like first year and a half, I felt good about it. Mm-hmm. Like I felt like he was doing his thing, I was doing my thing, and then we trusted each other mm-hmm. to off it, because there's not a lot of relationships that actually would have that level of trust in terms of just like, no, it's okay, like let's just go do our own things for a bit, you know.
Yeah.
So he was very supportive of that, and like I always ask him, I'm like, were you not bothered? He's like, yes, obviously I would have rather you'd stayed, but he was very, very supportive in terms of just like me doing my own thing.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that.
Yeah. I think that's probably what kept us together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's just, man, you just reach new levels of understanding every yeah. other week and every other month, but
yeah,
it was an interesting journey. Wouldn't say I'd do it again, but
it's behind
you know, yeah. yeah, hopefully, fingers crossed.
So fast forward to 2019 or whatever year it is. Me and you don't know our age or
oh god,
year
we don't
is.
Want to know our age anymore. After 25, it's oh no, I'm joking.
It's all downhill.
Your body starts failing you.
Literally, my neck is killing me these days. I'm like, what way am I sleeping? Like,
oh, we've got extra bones growing in our necks now from social media and everything. It's crazy.
Oh, it's killing me. Oh, I'm like, I hope this is not the start of it. But so most people know you now as a content creator, and mm-hmm. that kind of means photography,
yeah,
YouTube,
a little bit of everything,
because you do kind of have that more of a holistic approach to content.
Yeah. What? Oh, I love that holistic approach. Fab, I'm stealing that.
I say that in meetings all the time. It goes down well. So what would be kind of the misconceptions that people would have about somebody like yourself? And I don't want to put you in a pool of other people, because you know that that's not the way I think of you. But what kind of misconceptions do you get frustrated with as an independent content creator for so long? Because you've done your time now and you're so established. What kind of frustrations do you have?
Oh my God, screaming established. I literally can't take, I would take that as a compliment, but it's purely because I've actually been here so long that like, I don't think anyone can get rid of me at this point. I am the kind of person, and I spoke about this in another podcast recently, I do get a little bit awkward with the term like influencer. Mm-hmm. It's something like if someone introduces me as that, I'm like cool with it, but I wouldn't, it's not the first word I use for myself, because I feel like the misconception is you hear influencer and then you automatically think like boohoo ambassador, like, you know,
pretty little thing,
you know, and you know, Gymshark 20% off, but but like,
I don't know, it's so funny.
But I feel like I have taken like a different approach, and purely because because I am like a creative person, and no matter what like tank you put me in, like I'll find a way to like put my own spin on it and, you know, have my own take on it. But the influencer thing I do find tricky, because I'm not actually here to like influence anything. Mm-hmm. There's an organic sense of influencing, where just by sharing your life you are, you know.
But do you not think that you're, in some of your content, you're influencing purchases?
Oh, 100%. Okay. Like that's the job section of my of my work, but it's not like my main focus. And also when I hear the word like influencer, I'm thinking like, to me, like a true influencer is somebody that's really doing something important with their platform, like, you know, really like pushing environmental issues, or
right,
you know, like doing something that has like a feel good factor to it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like with the word influencer, it's become almost like a bit of a negative
thing.
Not for everyone, but just from my own lens, it's like, oh, when if someone was to describe me as an influencer, I'd be like, oh, that's only just one part mm-hmm. of me. Like, I feel like it doesn't fully encapsulate what I do, which is why I like content creator, because that's what I am first and foremost. I do sponsorships and stuff like that in order to keep content creating, mm-hmm. in order to spend the other 90% of my time putting out free content. Like, it's a means to you know, for me to keep doing what I like doing. But yeah, no, 100%, it's part of my job. But in terms of like, I'm not waking up every day wanting to sway people and wanting to push people in my favor. Whereas I've met some girls that are really strategic in that sense, and that it is a part of, you know, and I've met a lot of American influencers as well, and they really do take a different approach. And I've never been, I'm strategic from experience, but I don't wake up every day thinking, wow, I'm gonna do that because that's gonna do well, and this bit of clickbait is gonna, you know, work well, or, you know, I'm not strategic in the sense that I want to trick people, or I mm-hmm. want to, I do what's kind of like necessary within my space, but I definitely don't wake up every day being like, wow, like I want to sway people to click my link, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? What I would like to be in the future is an influencer for things that I am passionate about mm-hmm. outside of sponsors, essentially.
Okay. But yeah. So if you could post if Instagram had no algorithm mm-hmm. and you weren't dependent on social or content in any shape or form to make you money.
Yeah.
So you said, I don't wake up in the morning and want to do this. I don't wake up in the morning and want to do that. What do you wake up in the morning wanting to do? And what kind of keeps that,
you know, the spark going?
Yeah, the spark.
For me, honestly, it's just like, I love sharing. And I recently,
I thought you said showering.
Showering.
I was like, wow, sharing. What's this now? Is this a
sharing
new thing?
Sharing is caring. No, I love just reaching a lot of people, and I love making people feel good.
Okay.
Like, I always want people to feel good when they watch my content. I want them to feel confident. I want them to, like, I always kind of like go back to the fact that like anything I post on social media at any point in my life, it's just a reflection of my own life mm-hmm. and what I'm doing and how I'm feeling about myself. And the great thing is I have been able to like monetize it to a degree, but it's still my main focus. It's just basically to like reflect, look back on what I've done. And also, like, I recently actually changed my Instagram bio for the first time in like about 3 years. But it's now just like in a pursuit of a beautiful life, and that's honestly what I am in pursuit of. Like, I'm totally Libra in that sense, for any astrology people watching. Stephanie will know I'm a bit of a astrology nerd.
I wish we could do a podcast on astrology.
Oh my god, yeah. But no, it's just like I like finding beauty in the everyday. And part of my like Instagram and everything like that has just been sharing that. Like, just what no matter what kind of day it is, if it's an Instagram story or a post, is just whether it's something really frivolous, like fashion. I obviously do love fashion, but it's not like I have it in perspective. It's not something I'm like, and I got, I have to have this or I have to share this. But I share it from my own point of, I give it as much time as I feel like I like those topics in my real life.
Got it. Okay.
And it's always just a reflection. Like, at the moment I'm really into poetry, so I'm sharing a lot of quotes and trying to write myself.
Do you hold back some of the negativity that happens with real life because you want to kind of keep your social to what you spoke about being inspirational, kind of being more feel good content? Do you genuinely hold back the shit behind closed doors?
Funnily, no. I feel like I'm a fairly open book. Like, the only thing I keep private is my relationship, because I don't think there's one relationship out there that's like simple and straightforward and perfect. And I kind of keep that aspect for me. I mean, if anyone was to ask, I would like tell them straight up. Like, if you were to ask me a question now, I'd answer it honestly. But I am generally like quite a positive person.
Yeah.
And I think that like I've like gone through so much shit in the past, that's really just put life into perspective for me. So it's very, I find it very hard to complain about things, very hard to like not put those like everyday, like, ugh, like, you know, when things go wrong, I put them into perspective pretty fast. And every now and again, like, I'll share if there's something I feel like might help someone, I'll be like, just to let you know, like, I'm also going through this, or like, or going through that. Like, I have shared about last year, I kind of went through this little bout of depression last summer. So I've been, but it's only recently I've processed all of those actual feelings. So it's only now that I'm able to kind of like talk about them with like some perspective. And like, because I wasn't even able to recognize it myself at the time. So, yeah, no, but for the most part, like, even on my dark days, like, I'm still pretty, like, I'm still, like, I can always see the silver lining to things. Yeah. And that's what I try and focus on in life. And that's what I try and spread. I try and spread, like, no matter how bad things are, like, there is things in life you have control over. And those are the things you should focus on. Like, the things that you actually can. Like, there's so much shit we can't control in life. But there's a lot of stuff we can. So I try and focus on like empowering people to like take the reins for that, because it is, you know, you can choose to bring a little bit of positivity into your life every day, even if everything's going wrong, even if everyone's treating you shit. Like, you still have the choice to be a good person. So,
so that's what I'm kind of trying to spread. How did you become so self-aware on to that level?
I don't know. I think I've always been kind of a self-aware person, but I think being in this space you have to be self-aware. And maybe it's because I see people that aren't self-aware and I'm like, oh god, put that in the bank for like if I ever do something like that, like that's not a good way to do it, you know. So I think being in the space you do become self-aware. I don't know if I'd be this self-aware if I wasn't in this space. But
you mean by like working for yourself and like basically reviewing yourself every day?
Every day. Like, it's, it's my face. I'm watching it back. Like, trust me, there's no one that thinks they're more annoying than me. Like, I have to like listen to my own voice and edit it for like 12 hours a day. And like,
I know, it's,
you know, but also like, I'm just trying to like, in the process of just like owning all of that. And like, you know, you have to be your own biggest fan, which is what I'm learning.
How much of it do you think is like, what, so what do you think of like, you mentioned the hustle, like
we all know about that in New York.
When you first came to New York, you mentioned the hustle. How do you feel like the hustle is in your life now? Because I'm going to go back to that word established. You know, I feel like you're you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like you've channeled I can't talk today. I feel like you've channeled what your voice, and I feel like you've channeled the self-awareness, and I feel like you're kind of almost running with that now, and you've really got into your niche. and you've really kind of set your tone, your voice, you know what you're about, you know what you want to do, you know what you don't want to do. How much of it now is still like that, like hardcore, like hustle, or have you as a person taken a step back and be like, actually I want to enjoy life now?
I think it's a bit of both. I'm a very big like advocate of like, you know, not work, what's the saying, not live to work but work to live. I only work because I want to like enjoy the finer aspects in life. So like,
so when
I don't,
you wake up in the morning like
I'm not like, I don't know how I come across online, but I am not the most like motivated scheduled person. Like some days, like I start my day at like 2 p.m. but then I'm working to like 8 or 9. Like I'm very, I could actually do with a kick up the ass. And like my friend Ruth was here and she's very much like, this is a list of things we need to do, these are some great ideas. And then she helps me again, going back to like an astrology thing, I'm like very much a dreamer and I'm great at coming up with ideas, and I'm there's a lot of things I want to do, but I need sort of that fire in my life and people around me to actually help me put them into motion. So that's something I struggle with all the time. Like there's so many things I want to do, but like I, as a and I think a lot of creative people struggle with this, whether you're a writer or a photographer, is that you actually need a lot of reflection time. And in New York, where it's a city of such hustle, you feel bad for that time to recoup and actually gain some perspective on what you're doing. But I again, it's something else that I'm coming to terms with, that I'm just, everyone's different. Some people are, they get up in the morning, they work a 9-to-5 day, even if they work for themselves, they're very strict about it. And I'm just not a strict person that way. It's, I do the work as it comes through. I take some time out, I reflect on what I want to do next, and it's just, it's to avoid burnout for me. I know now when to listen to my body and to not beat myself up when I do have a lot of free time. Like today, I didn't really have a lot on my schedule, but Tuesday, Wednesday, I've a lot to do.
Right, but it's also like,
in New York, you feel like,
and we're working.
True. That's the funny thing about social media, there's a blurred line with it. It's just like, when does it, I don't clock out of my job. Like it's my job, my is reflected, a reflection of my life, so that never really stops. So but it suits my lifestyle for sure.
Cool. All right, well, we have managed to grasp a lot of content already, which is amazing, but I wanted to ask you about three New York places to go to eat that you love. I'm not gonna say restaurants because they might be cafes or something, but three places that you maybe have like the best croissant or the best like pasta dish or something.
Oh my god.
Brooklyn or Manhattan.
Food is definitely the way to my heart. God, I have a lot of favorite places to eat. I think one of my favorite places for pasta, I've definitely become a pasta girl since moving to New York. I feel like it's just such a classic New York dish that just, there's nowhere else in the world that does, not even Italy. I feel like American pasta is different.
I've never had pasta here.
Oh, what? Yeah. Are you like gluten-free or like?
I just a lot of carbs.
Oh, yeah, no, you're, don't go down that road because it's hard hole to come out of. There's an Italian, a small little, like totally New York City, like tiny tables, but really atmospheric, like candlelit, in I think the West Village. It's called Malatesta Trattoria, and I adore it. Get their spinach gnocchi in gorgonzola sauce. It's it's the most indulgent thing of all time, but really
so
well priced.
Malatesta,
M-A-L-A. That's a good spot. That's like a really like romantic spot I love going to with friends. So you sit outside. It's very cute little New York place that isn't cheesy, because some New York places are like really like white tablecloths and like super old-fashioned. And then where else do I like for brunch? I love a good brunch. God, there's so many. I'm a fan of an Australian cafe for sure.
Okay,
anything that has like Aussie vibes, like good coffee, bright spaces, a bit like The Loft, like white. I like lots of white and like happy vibes and coffee. I mean, you're a fan of coffee, you can understand. There's Two Hands. I don't fall under like The Butcher's Daughter and like my wife Frida. I feel like those places are really overrated.
Yeah,
those are the places when you're looking up to go to New York, go to these places, but they're really overpriced.
Yeah,
and
they are
average for like, at the end
two
of the day,
Hands is like,
yeah,
cool.
it's a bit where else do I like though? Oh, there's a couple of places in Williamsburg that I really like. there's a cafe called Cafe Colette, just a solid brunch menu and like a little bit of everything. And bars, I really love a good cocktail bar.
Okay.
So for me, if you're in Williamsburg, Hotel Del Mano, I love like speakeasy vibes where you don't even know it's a bar from like the outside.
Okay.
Hotel Del Mano is amazing. And on the spot in New York, oh my god, if you pulled up my Yelp right now,
there'll be loads.
There'll be so many. But what's your favorite one?
I went to Friend of a Farmer, is that what it's called?
Oh yeah, basically? Yeah.
That one kind of stuck out, and I know that they have like more than one location, so
yeah,
it could arguably be a chain, but
yeah,
I did love that vibe.
Yeah.
I just thought it was so cool.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely like my, probably exactly like how my mom has decorated her house, which is probably why I like it. I love Friend of a Farmer, but I don't know, I kind of like more experience.
Yeah,
food.
The atmosphere.
Yeah.
The atmosphere is everything.
The atmosphere is really everything. Like even Rosemary's, which is very like overdone, but I love.
But it's still like typical West Village vibes,
yeah,
and it's quite nice and
yeah,
like chilled and relaxed.
Yeah, I like them.
Oh, there's so many.
There really is.
I like Little Prince. That's kind of in like Tribeca or Soho as well. It's kind of like a really nice like steak place. Again, very tight, very New York. Tables are right up against each other, but like my god,
and
that's my weakness.
That stuck out to me was the William Vale.
Oh yeah, I've
now,
never been.
Didn't eat there.
Yeah,
but
do you have drinks there? Or?
Yeah, we had drinks in the rooftop, and it's just it was just one of those places that like
stunning,
just stuck out to me in terms of like the vibe and like
mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, I want to go back there again.
I know, I really want to do like a staycation there,
oh,
like
so
really
beautiful.
Bad, like oh, the pool and everything looks amazing.
Yeah, so and the one hotel in Dumbo. Oh,
never done it. I've never done it.
So if you eat downstairs in the
yeah,
restaurant, which is beautiful food and really bright and open, if you eat down there, you get up to the rooftop free.
Okay.
But it's only for residents up there, so it's
okay,
really private and exclusive. And it's just insane. And all the best views of Manhattan
mm-hmm,
are in Brooklyn.
I think so too.
Oh,
I think
yeah,
there's nothing that beats like a Brooklyn rooftop and like at sunset where you can like actually see Manhattan from a
yeah,
distance. It's really special. I think if you're in New York, like make sure you get to Brooklyn at least like one evening, even if it's just walking over the Brooklyn Bridge at
yeah,
sunset. That's like one of my favorite things to do, which I recommended recently. But I mean, like I kind of do like daily recommendations on my Instagram, like anywhere that I'm at is sort of usually somewhere I would recommend.
Yeah.
So I've started adding them to like a highlight as well,
your recommendations.
Yeah, like anytime I like find somewhere cool, I'm trying to build
yeah,
a highlight on that.
Alright, well we've exhausted all our time. I feel
woo,
like we could sit here for hours.
Oh, this always happens.
I feel like I'm always missing so much of the conversation, but we've got so much knowledge and so appreciate you sharing your story.
Oh, absolutely.
And your
I hope you
ends,
all enjoyed.
Yes. Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.